Welcome back. Kathy Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Open forum continues, and you are welcome to call whether you're Catholic or not, whether you're Christian or not, whether you agree with us or disagree with us. It doesn't matter. Whatever. If you got a question, 888-318-7884. Whatever your question is, it is welcome here because we've got the man who started CatholicQuestions.com, a long time part of the Catholic Answers family, spent a lot of his life answering questions here or helping other people answer questions here at Catholic Answers. And now CatholicQuestions.com is where he continues the ministry of just taking obstacles out of people's way by answering their questions so they can come closer to Jesus and the church. Jim Blackburn, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, you know, that's what I did at Catholic Answers for almost 10 years was the Q&A department. And when Catholic Answers moved its focus to the Catholic School of College, Catholic Answers School of Apologetics and the speakers and these things more in the conferences and got away from the one-on-one Q&A, I saw that there was a need for that. And so I started Catholic Questions and happy to do that. And I tell you, most of the time when we answer questions, we're sending them right back to Catholic Answers, to the resources that Catholic Answers has. So, because that's the best place for resources.
Yeah, it's just had, I mean, one of the wonderful things about Catholic.com here at Catholic Answers is, and I don't take any credit for this, I got here late, but is just decades of building up an answer to almost any question you could have about the Catholic faith. You got a question and somebody's asked it.
Yeah, and a lot of times people just like, they would like to call in and talk to an apologist today. I think Jimmy was on last hour.
Right.
Or talk to me this hour. There are people who still would like some personal guidance in,
yeah,
you know, how can I answer this question? Where can I get additional resources? Can you direct me to resources I can trust? These kinds of things. And that's where we come in. We help people. We guide them to the right answers to their questions, or I should say to answers that are faithful to the magisterial teaching of the church, and then we help them see why those answers are faithful, you know, whether we're quoting the Catechism or Vatican II documents or going to Catholic Answers website and providing them with a link to a tract for additional information, mm-hmm, or recommending a 20 questions book or a 20 answers book, something like that.
Our number here is 888-318-7884. I'll be honest with you right now. The lines are full to start the show. So lots of people have questions for our guest, Jim Blackburn. And if you haven't ever checked it out, check out CatholicQuestions.com. It's easy to find. You just type in CatholicQuestions.com and you get there. I think we better go right to the phones, though, Jim, because there is a load of folks on. All right. Let's go to Robert in Missouri. Robert, thanks for starting us off this hour. Go ahead with your question for Jim.
Mm-hmm. My question for you, Jim, is in terms of Jesus Christ's relationship to the church, what is the difference between a mystical union, a spiritual union, or a physical union?
All right. I'm going to repeat it just because I think some listeners will not have heard it. So essentially, what's the difference between a mystical union, a spiritual union, and a physical union?
Okay. Well, I would say, first, I would really want to see the context that those terms are being used in, because I don't know that they each necessarily have a specific, you know, theological definition, at least to my knowledge. You know, mystical union is one certainly that does. Mystical union is a description of, say, a saint whose union with God is so great and has grown so great that he is in complete communion with God and no longer sins at that point, and is able to through the grace of God maintain that union then onto death. And some saints have attained that mystical union. I suppose the term could be used in a broader or more generic sense, but that's really the primary definition of that term that I'm aware of. When it comes to a spiritual union, I'm more familiar probably with the term spiritual communion. And that is what we do before we receive the Eucharist. We want to be in spiritual communion with Christ, with His church. And even if we, for some reason, are not able to receive communion, we want to, within ourselves and within the body of Christ, have that spiritual communion with one another and with Christ. And that is it's a friendship that we have. It's a mindset of unity. Physical union, I think, that term can be used in a lot of different ways, but I mean, I think a physical union is marriage. I know that there are some outside the Catholic Church who would use the term physical union in a way that we use marriage, but it would be without being married, without getting married. Well, we're not married, we're in a physical union. That I've heard the term used that way. So that's how I would initially address this question and those terms. I think if I could see them being used by Robert or whoever Robert is coming across them in context, might be able to be more help. But what's your thoughts, Sire?
Well, I mean, it's just interesting to hear you talk about it because you think of a term like I thought that was very helpful because I didn't know how you were going to answer that. But like you hear a term like mystical union and you realize that it's sometimes used in a pious way, sometimes used in a theological way. Maybe it's used in a different way in the 15th century than it's used in the 20th century or the 21st century. Or one saint meant one thing by it and another meant another by it. So it's not like the word, some of these very Catholic terms, we have a whole kind of set of terminology that's important, but that it's not like the word Trinity that, you know, means the same thing all the time.
Right. It's not a well-defined theological term. And I don't know of any, I would say the closest of these that would be mystical union, because it very specifically refers to
that
highest state of union with God in this life. Spiritual communion, I would say, is probably defined somewhere as that what we do before we receive the Eucharist or when we can't receive the Eucharist.
Yeah,
physical union, that's kind of wide open.
Right. Because even the reception of the Eucharist, in a sense, there's a physical contact between the person of Jesus and ourselves.
Sure.
I think you were right on with the way you broke it down. But Robert, I think what you'd have to do is take what you're reading to a knowledgeable Catholic source, maybe a priest or someone else who's well educated, and say, what did it mean in this context? I'm going to leave it there because I don't know that we can be more helpful than that, and I don't think we can get into all the context right now. Thanks very much for starting us off, Robert. I'm going to go to Connecticut now. Chris in Connecticut, watching on YouTube. Go ahead, Chris, with your question for Jim Blackburn.
Hey, thank you for having me. So my question is, I couldn't find this anywhere online. Is Padre Pio and Stigmata? Do you think it's real? What's your position on it? What's the church's position? And if you think it's real, why did he have the holes through it, the palm of his hands, and not the wrists? If many people believe that Jesus was crucified through the wrists, nailed to the cross through the wrists.
Okay.
My understanding is that Padre Pio did have the stigmata, and that it was, the church has a procedure for, verifying that this is worthy of belief. And I believe the church has done that when it came to the stigmata for Padre Pio. Whether or where the stigmata occurred, in the palms of his hands, while today we generally recognize that crucifixion in the first century, Roman crucifixion in the first century, would have pierced more through the wrists, probably is because that's the way that it's depicted in art. We don't know actually for certain exactly where Christ's hand or arm was pierced, and the hand could be something that is more than what we think of as a hand today. The hand could include the wrist. So to have the stigmata anywhere in that area, and especially since it's artistically portrayed that way, would seem to be appropriate for a person who's experienced the stigmata. So to my knowledge, it was authentic, and the stigmata can happen in a variety of ways. And for it to happen, actually, pictures I've seen of Padre Pio was very much through the palm of his hand, not what we think of as the wrist today. That's probably more because that's how it is commonly depicted in art, and how we generally think of when we see Jesus crucified on a crucifix. Oftentimes, we see the piercings through palms of his hands and not his wrists. To be consistent with that, that's where Padre Pio experienced the stigmata. That's would be my understanding.
All right, Chris, we got to take a break, so I have to leave it there. But thank you very much for the question. It's a busy open forum today. We're going to answer lots more questions with our guest, Jim Blackburn, right after this.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Do you have a question but prefer to ask it privately? Catholic Questions can help. Go to CatholicQuestions.com to ask your question online, email us, drop us a letter, or give us a call. Longtime Catholic Answers Live apologist and author Jim Blackburn or another Catholic Questions apologist will be happy to assist you. Catholic Questions proudly supports Catholic Answers Live, so visit us at CatholicQuestions.com today. That's CatholicQuestions.com.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The power of prayer simply means that words have an effect. For example, when a couple says, "I do," it literally changes two people to becoming one in marriage. When you say, "I love you," it changes us and it gives us value. The power of prayer is in the words and in the sentiment, but it's also in the fact that God, who is omnipotent, all-powerful, answers our prayers.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. It's open forum today, and lots of folks taking their opportunity to call, so we're quite busy. But before we go back to the phones and get some more questions for our guest, Jim Blackburn, we've got some really great Catholic Answers podcast episodes that I want to tell you about. Right now, the new one that's up is My Soul Immortal? Our good friend Carla Broussard answers some questions that I had, and I kind of thought, I want to have a clearer understanding of the immortality of the soul. And Carlo's a philosopher, and I asked him, so it gets a little philosophical, that one, but lots of people have found it helpful, as I did. We talked with Dr. Larry Chapp about whether the papacy of Pope Francis is self-defeating. It's an interesting conversation and a lot of Dorothy Day in it. So if you have an interest in Dorothy Day, you'd be interested in that one. We talked with Noelle Maring about her new book about being awake and not woke. The title of that one is What's Wrong with Woke? Scott Hahn, we did Rescuing the Bible from Experts, a stellar conversation, as always, with Scott Hahn. And Tim Staples, we asked him, is the church hiding the Book of Enoch? Why isn't the Book of Enoch in the Catholic Bible? What happened? And Tim gave us some great, helpful answers. You can find Catholic Answers Focus at CatholicAnswersFocus.com or wherever you get podcasts, or just go over to YouTube and watch it on YouTube. Our number again, 888-318-7884. Our guest is Jim Blackburn. And next on the line, we go to Vermont for Logan. Logan, thank you so much for your call. Go ahead with your question for Jim.
Oh my God. Hey, it's me again.
It's nice to hear you again, Logan.
So I got a question. It's a bit of an interesting one. And do cut me off if you can't. So in the Bible, so should we as Christians expect our governments to follow a Christian ethic? And what I mean more so by that is, well, Jesus in the Bible says, you know, no rich man can go through the heaven. The Bible often talks about how wealth is bad, et cetera, exonerate the poor, et cetera. Should we expect our governments to, you know, be more, have a left-wing economic policy while also sticking with firm Christian social values.
All right, Logan, thanks.
Yeah, without getting into left-wing, right-wing, Republican, Democrat, those kinds of things, I would say that we hold Christian values as Christians, as Catholics. We hold Christian values, and we should desire that our neighbors hold Christian values, and that includes our local governments and all the way up to our federal government. We should desire that. We should vote for that, for our values, and hope that our government would come around on some of these things where it hasn't. So should we expect that? Well, I think we should know better than to expect that it's going to happen, at least not 100%, and at least not overnight. But we can do our best to try to make that happen. That's why, as Catholics, we, rather than look at party line, you know, their platforms and get into the left-wing, right-wing stuff, we should say, what's Catholic? And we know Catholic is pro-life. And so we should vote for pro-life. We should always vote in the direction of pro-life, and hope that abortion is something that is made illegal because it kills innocent children. And we know that's wrong. The same thing goes with marriage. You know, we should support our government and laws that promote marriage and that recognize what marriage truly is, and keep that sacred in our communities. Religious freedom is something that we hold dear and have as a Christian value, and so we should vote according with those types of principles. That's what I would say. You used the word expect. Should we expect our government to follow Christian values? I would say we should attempt to get them to. We should hope that government officials will and laws will be consistent with our Catholic and our values and our morals. And we should do everything we can to make that happen.
Logan, I always like it when you call. I'm glad you got through again. As I've been saying, though, we are very, very busy with calls, and so I'm going to keep moving and get as many on with Jim as I can. So we'll go to Washington now, listening on Ave Maria Radio. Cheryl in Washington, you're next. Go ahead, Cheryl, with your question.
Good afternoon, gentlemen,
and
thank you very much for taking my call. My question is, I have a son who is just on his journey. He figured out football wasn't going to get us into heaven. And he keeps telling me, you know, that the Catholic Church is withholding important books that belong in the Bible from us. And I'm wondering where in the heck he's getting that idea. And if so, why are they? And if not, how can I explain it to him so he'll go?
Has he named any of these books that are being withheld?
No. No, I don't think he really, I think he's just throwing, see, I just took my 3-year journey and followed up by my confirmation last February. And of course, I'm ecstatic. I'm excited. I don't know why anybody would question this because it's thrilling. And so I think he's just trying to, you know, he's not saying that what I've done is bad. He's terrific. He's excited about that part of it.
But he's challenging
he's
the Catholic Church.
Coming up with roadblocks. And of course, me being a baby, and I can't get him to listen to you guys. So what can I tell him?
Well, here's what I would do. I suspect maybe if he's thinking that the Catholic Church has withheld books from the Bible or has not canonized books that should be canonized, he may be talking about what we would consider to be apocryphal books from, you know, the early centuries of the Church. I don't know. Since you don't know, I don't know if that's what he's talking about, but that would be my suspicion. So what I would do if I were talking to him, Cheryl, is I would ask him, does he know how the Church came up with the list of books that we do believe or we do know to be part of Scripture, part of the Bible, and kind of take him through a history lesson of that. You know, it isn't something that happened overnight. The books of the New Testament, for example, were written late into the first century, and it wasn't until really the third century when all these apostolic letters, these various different gospels, various different books that some purported to be written by Mary Magdalene or others, Thomas, for example, that these books were floating around. And it wasn't really until near the end of the fourth century that the church finally came up with a definitive canon, looking at which of these books have withheld the test of time, which of these books have been circulated since they were written, which of these books contain what we know to be truth, all of these kinds of things. And then the church settled first, really, at a synod of Rome in the year 382, but then after that, it was ratified at Councils of Hippo and Carthage, and down through the history of the church, that same canon or list of books that belong in the Bible, that same canon has been ratified again and again down through the history of the church. Now, in the 16th century, then, during the Protestant Reformation and the advent of books being thrown out of the Old Testament by Protestants, and even some Protestant leaders wanting to throw out the parts of the New Testament, some of the New Testament books. It wasn't really until then, though, that the church finally dogmatically laid out that same canon, that going all the way back to the fourth century, dogmatically defined these books belong in Scripture and not others. So I think if he were to understand that, he might have a better realization of why we have and maintain the canon that we have. And it might help him recognize why other canons that say include books that are not in the Catholic Bible might be problematic. They might not have quite that history. They might not have been put together quite as authoritatively as the canon that we in the Catholic Church had. And go from there. There is a tract at Catholic.com titled Old Testament Canon, which specifically addresses the formation of the canon, and also it's called Old Testament Canon because ultimately Protestants did include all of the books of the New Testament in their canons. It was only Old Testament books, seven Old Testament books, and parts of two other Old Testament books that they eventually discarded, took out of their Bibles. So if you look up the tract Old Testament Canon at Catholic.com, you will you maybe want to provide that to your son as a starting point.
You know what? I was mentioning the episode of Catholic Answers Focus that we did with Tim, and maybe it'd be fun for you to watch it. And if you're engaged by it, it might be something that you want to share with your son. You can just put in Catholic Answers Focus, Book of Enoch, and you'll come to it, because that one's about, there's a lot on the internet now about the church is hiding the Book of Enoch, and the Book of Enoch has secret knowledge that the Catholic Church doesn't want you to know, and that kind of thing. So in addition to the things that Jim just mentioned, maybe you want to just type in Book of Enoch, Catholic Answers Focus, and see if it's something that he would watch with you. All right, Cheryl?
Thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
All right. God bless you. Let's see. What are we doing now? Oh, we're going. Hang on. We're going to a little place I like to call Detroit. Rob, watching on YouTube in Detroit. You are next, Rob. Go ahead with your question for Jim Blackburn.
How you doing? First of all, quit playing with your wedding ring. I'll show you my ring of old finger. It hurts. It's fine. Or never mind.
Ben. Wait. Am I playing with my wedding ring on the like on the video feed?
Yes.
I do that constantly. Stop pointing out my flaws on the radio.
Do you know what ring avulsion is? Do you know what ring avulsion is?
No.
I should send you a picture of my hand.
No.
Make you stop doing that. Anyway.
Okay. All right, go
anyway,
on.
Anyway, I have, by the way, I need to confess that I have to put you on speakerphone because I'm alone in my car, but I had an emergency.
Okay.
So now I have to do this to keep my hands on the wheel. So I just wanted to be honest there.
Okay. Oh, are you? Did we lose you? Wait, I'm confused. Was he? Was the confession the whole call, or was?
I think he was trying to switch to speakerphone, but we. I don't know if we lost him.
Oh, all right.
Rob, are you still there?
Now he's got me all upset about my wedding ring. I just can't deal with this. This is too much stress. I have to take a break. I'm sorry. Rob has utterly undermined my confidence in my own finger. Should I look that up, or is it going to be one of those things where it's going to be a gross picture on the internet of some swollen finger with? I'm not going to do it. I'll just stop playing with my finger. And Rob, we're going to come back to you. We'll see if we can get you. But this is a hard break, so I can't do anything about it. Jim Blackburn is our guest. It's open forum. Back with more of that right after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers is doing it again. We're holding our 7th annual Apologetics Conference this September in beautiful San Diego, California, and we'd like to see you there. Join us September 23rd to 26th for a lively and inspiring conference with an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to jumpstart your faith. It's a great chance to meet all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and very special guests as we spend 4 days talking about worshiping and adoring our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. This is where it all begins. Don't miss what promises to be the event of the season. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite, inspire, and inform your faith. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000 to register.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This is Dr. David Anders. Are your friends or family discouraging you from becoming Catholic?
We can help on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
I knew you were going to do it. I knew you were going to play groovy music twice. Makes me happy. It's open forum on Catholic Answers Live today. Jim Blackburn is our guest. Jim worked here at Catholic Answers for a long, long time, and we still have a close association. And one of the things that Catholic Answers did for a long, long time was provide personal answers to folks who had questions about the Catholic faith. And now Jim does that at CatholicQuestions.com, CatholicQuestions.com. And you don't do it alone, Jim. There's other people that help you there. You have other apologists working with you.
Yes, and we actually all were volunteers. So as of now, we've been doing this for about, 9 months, I guess. We do this because our hearts call us to do it. We want to continue to offer the service. We want to help people. Of course, we do accept donations to pay the bills, but primarily, we want to have a venue still available for people to be able to one-on-one do what they're doing, say, here during a Catholic Answers Live Q&A open forum, but contact us anytime. And we generally are able to get back to people within a day or two at the most, and very glad to still be able to offer that. And we've found that many people are very happy that we have continued to offer it. So please take note of CatholicQuestions.com and contact us anytime.
And I'll take note of this before we go back to the callers. Four lines all of a sudden opened up. So if you have a question, this is a perfect time to call. 888-318-7884. You don't have to be Catholic. You don't have to be Christian. Anybody can call. 888-318-7884. We go to Matthew in West Virginia. Matthew, there with us?
Yeah, I'm there.
Hi, Matthew. Go ahead with your question for Jim.
Yeah, so I've been, I guess, having a lot of, like, suicidal thoughts. And I've been an atheist for a long time, but I'm just wondering, I guess, how, I guess, faith could play a role in helping one have the will to live, if that makes any sense, and also what the Catholics' views on suicide are.
Okay. Matthew, have you sought medical help? Because it's a very serious thing to be contemplating suicide. Have you sought...
I'm asking this just because I'm in the radio. I have sought medical help,
okay.
And that is
okay.
Ongoing. So, yeah.
Okay, very good, very good.
Yeah, and Matthew, I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist. I'm a Catholic apologist. So I'm going to answer your question from that perspective. And I would actually ask you, as an atheist, if you were to commit suicide, once you have passed, what would be there? What would your experience be after that?
I wouldn't expect to experience anything. I think my brain would cease functioning, and mm-hmm. then it would cease to perceive, and the consciousness that comes with that, I suppose.
Okay, that's what I fully suspected that you would answer with, and so I think the answer to your question is then, would faith do anything for you? I think it would, because if you were to embrace a faith like Christianity, you would have a different answer to that question. You would know that after you died, there would be something that would come after that. And if you die in the right state, we call it a state of grace in the Catholic Church, then what awaits you after death is beautiful, wonderful, everything that we are created for. And so we can have the joy and the expectation that that's what would happen after death. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that would happen after suicide, because then there's a question about if a person commits suicide, does he die in a state of grace? And the Catholic Church does teach that we can hope that a person who has committed suicide is not fully culpable of their actions. Maybe they didn't understand the gravity of what they were doing. Maybe a person was so suffering psychologically so much that it just reduces this suicidal person's culpability to maybe nothing, maybe no culpability, in which case a person like that, we can hope for their salvation. But the other side of the coin is if we die not in a state of grace, which essentially means in friendship with God, if we die not in that state, then there is something for us after this life too, but it really is, it's a form of suffering because we come to realize at that point, our eyes are opened in a sense, and we come to realize what we have chosen to forego. And that is, we chose to forego heaven by making maybe some bad choices, maybe in this life. And so we would not want to die in or outside of a state of grace. But we live our lives, hopefully, so that at our point of death, which we don't know when that will be, we don't want to take our own lives, we know that's not for us to do. God didn't give us the really authority to take our own lives. He, that's something that comes in God's time when he decides. And so if we wait for that moment and we try to live our lives maintaining or staying in a state of grace, and the Church helps us to do that with the sacraments, to remain in a state of grace, we can have what we say call a happy death and die in a state of grace and then go on to eternal joy with God in heaven, as which is what he really created us for. So Matthew, absolutely, if faith is something you're considering, it's the difference between darkness and light. Faith would give you a reason, I believe, to not commit suicide, because first of all, you don't want to displease God in that way, but secondly, because you are moving forward in your life with hope for what we all hope for, and that is to live eternally with God in heaven. So I hope that helps, Matthew. Again, I'm not coming at it from a psychiatric view. I'm coming at it from an apologetics view, meaning that just from a theological perspective and based on our faith, why embracing faith would, I think, help you to avoid suicidal thoughts and help you turn away from those.
Matthew, what do you think?
I mean, it was a good answer to help me understand the Catholic Church's perspective on these things. I was kind of just interested in the Catholic faith because I was hearing about Dorothy Day and some of the work they were doing and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always liked listening to Catholic radio, so it just kind of, if I did have a faith, I would probably be Catholic because I just like Catholic radio, honestly. So,
well, yeah. That's cool. That's actually very, very cool. I share your interest in Dorothy Day. I was a member of a Catholic worker house for a while, and we have a very famous bishop in the Catholic Church, Bishop Robert Barron, who says, you know, people have different doorways into the church, and some the doorway is beauty, some the doorway is truth, and some the doorway is goodness. And Dorothy Day, I think, appeals to those people who are looking for the goodness doorway. You know, the people who appreciate what she did for the poor and that helps them to have hope and to come closer to God. If you would like, Matthew, I would like to send you two books. Our colleague Jimmy Akin wrote a book called The Words of Eternal Life, True Happiness and Where to Find It. And I'm pretty sure he wrote it for you. I don't know that he ever met you, but I'm pretty sure he wrote the book for you. And if you would like it, I would love to send it to you. For me, what makes life worth living is the person of Jesus. And so I wrote a book about Jesus, and I would also like to send you that book. You're welcome to say no. You don't have to take them. But I'd love you to have them, and maybe we can talk in the future. It's very kind of you to say that you enjoy listening to Catholic radio.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you guys do a good job, and you have, I don't know. It's not like what I would expect from Christian radio, like in the preachiness. Like, they're kind of grounded in what they believe in, and it just seems very, I don't know. There seems to be something honest about it usually when I listen, so I appreciate it.
Well, that's beautiful, and thank you very, very much. I hope that we'll continue with this conversation. You just hang on the line, and Thomas, who's handling the phones today, will get your information if you would like to get those two books. And I would particularly recommend Jimmy Akin's book, The Words of Eternal Life. I think they address exactly the kind of questions and seeking that you have right now. Jim Blackburn, did you want to say anything else before we let Matthew go?
Well, Matthew, I would just mention my organization is called Catholic Questions, and you can find us at catholicquestions.com. You can contact us anytime online, you know, even give us a call, and we'll be happy to help you further if you need that.
Matthew, it's gratifying to speak to you. It always makes me, I'll tell you the truth, anxious when I hear people talking about suicide. But you know that that there's medical help. Do not forego that medical help. And I think that when you maybe read Jimmy's book, you will at least have a sense of why we have so much hope and so much joy in the person of Jesus. And maybe that joy and that hope is for you as well. You are always welcome to call back here. I am going to go to a break, and we'll be right back with more Open Forum.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Go forth and preach the good news. It's not just a suggestion. If you want to take more seriously the command of Jesus to share the gospel with those around you,
consider joining St. Paul Street Evangelization. It's a grassroots organization that brings the Catholic faith to the streets in a non-confrontational way. Visit our website, www.streetevangelization.com, to learn more. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. It's time to do our part.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Isn't it awesome that we today do not recognize his presence in the Eucharist? Is it because we really don't go to him in humbleness of heart and say, Lord, I don't believe, help my unbelief. Lord, I want to see you. I want to recognize you. I cannot live without you. Are we saying that?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Brandon just doing an amazing job on the sound. And just, come on, Brandon, you're just killing it. I'm not saying that to say anything negative about Zach, who made a mess of it yesterday, but you're just doing a great job today. Our number is 888-31-TRUTH. Our guest is Jim Blackburn, and you can ask any question you want about Christianity, about the Pope, about the Bible. We got a moral question. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Let's go to Robert right here in California, listening to EWTN on channel 130 Sirius XM satellite radio. Go ahead, Robert, with your question.
My question is kind of a twofold question. Is homosexuality the orientation? Is that a sin by itself? And if not, then when does it become a sin? Is it emotional connection? Obviously, physical connection. So,
got
yeah.
It. Okay, Robert. Great, Robert. Thank you. Jim?
Okay, Robert, in the Catholic faith, the Church teaches that as a result of original sin, the fall of our first parents, that our human nature suffered and continues to suffer. And one of the sufferings of our human nature is what the Church calls concupiscence. Concupiscence is an inclination towards sin. Now, since original sin is really no fault of ours, it is something that we need to have washed away, but concupiscence is something that even after we're baptized, concupiscence remains. So it's not something that we're culpable of. If I have an inclination toward drunkenness, but I don't get drunk, then I'm not sinning. But that inclination towards sin is something that is a result of a fallen human nature. It's an inclination to do something I shouldn't do. Well, homosexuality is seen the same way. It's an inclination toward doing something we shouldn't do. If we choose to act out on that inclination, that's when we commit sin. So just having an inclination towards sin, which quite frankly, every one of us, whether we want to admit it or not, has an inclination towards sin of some kind. And it's only when we act out on that inclination, when we embrace that inclination even, that we sin. If we struggle with it, and maybe once in a while we do fall into that sin, but we don't embrace it, we go to confession, we confess our sin, we have the desire to not commit that sin again, we're really doing what we can. That's why Jesus gave us the sacraments, sacrament of confession in particular, to help us when we fall, and the sacrament of the Eucharist to continue to strengthen us with graces to fight sin. But to answer your question specifically, just a homosexual orientation of itself is not a sin. But when a person, knowing that that inclination is gravely wrong and freely chooses to act out on it anyway, that's when he commits a serious sin.
Robert, does that all answer what you needed?
Yes, but just for clarification then, there can be an emotional connection without a physical connection? I guess I'm splitting hairs here.
I don't think that's splitting hairs at all. Those are quite distinct things.
Yes, and certainly I would say, Robert, if the relationship is one of friendship and one of, I would say, that comes out of an authentic Christian love. And an authentic Christian love is a love that truly desires for the other what God desires for that person. That type of a friendship, that type of a love for another, it's certainly something that's acceptable. But if it arouses the homosexual inclination, if it becomes sexual at all, that's where you really have to draw the line. Many people who do suffer from a homosexual inclination find it difficult to have relationships with other men who suffer from homosexual inclinations because it becomes a near occasion of sin for them. It becomes a constant source of temptation for them. And so I would encourage you only to have those types of relationships if you're seeking, some spiritual help, spiritual direction. There is an organization in the Catholic Church called Courage. The website is couragerc.org, I believe. Mm-hmm. That is an organization just for men and women who suffer from a homosexual inclination, but don't want to act out on that. They want to continue to live their lives in a way that's pleasing to God, and they know that this is an inclination towards sin, so they help each other within this organization to stay away from that, to live their lives in accordance with God's will for their lives.
Okay, Robert?
Thank you.
Thank you. And call back anytime. We do this every Tuesday and Thursday, open forum. That's you can call other days too. We'll be happy to talk with you. Let's see. Let's go to, I'm going to say Yasmin in Salem, Oregon, listening on Modern Day Radio. Did I pronounce it right, Yasmin?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Is this Yasmin?
Uh-huh. This is she.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a long-time listener. I really enjoy the show. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
I think my question is, I want to know the reason, if there was a reason why Christ descended to death after the crucifixion.
Yes. Yasmin, and there's a very good reason for it that I would say you need to kind of start with an understanding of sacramental theology. Big terminology there. But if you understand what the sacraments are for in the Catholic Church, if you understand why we get baptized, and why when we sin again, we go to confession, why we receive the Eucharist, why do we receive the sacraments? It's to put ourselves in and remain in a state of sanctifying grace. Well, prior to Jesus is the one who instituted the sacraments. Prior to Jesus coming and instituting the sacraments and giving us the church to administer those sacraments, people didn't have a way of fully receiving sanctifying grace necessary to live in heaven in the beatific vision. So what God would do, and we see this kind of a picture of this in the parable of Lazarus and the rich man, where Lazarus and the rich man both die, and they go to a single abode, the abode of the dead, often called hell. But Lazarus is in a place of comfort, being comforted by Abraham, and the rich man is across a great chasm that cannot be crossed by either of them, and he's in a place of suffering. And this kind of gives us an image, really, of what the afterlife looked like before Christ's institution of the sacraments and founding of the church and his death and resurrection. And when he died, he descended to that place where Lazarus was. The Catechism of the Catholic Church tells us that this was the hell that he descended to, the abode of the dead, those who were awaiting the gates of heaven to open to them. And so he went down to where they were, where parabolically we could say Lazarus was being comforted by Abraham, to that place, I should say, from a parable perspective. That's where Jesus descended into. And so at that point then, since he had accomplished for humanity what he came to accomplish, and these were people who died in God's friendship, he was able to then open the gates of heaven for them. So that's why he descended into hell after his crucifixion, so that he can open the gates of heaven for those who preceded him in death in God's friendship, but the gates of heaven had not yet been opened. By Jesus' work on the cross, by his death and suffering, and by the institution of the sacraments and the founding of his church. Does that help, Yasmin?
Oh, yeah, wow. I didn't know that. So that was a great answer. Thank you very much. Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. Yeah.
No, that's great. A satisfied customer, Jim Blackburn. Yasmin, thank you very, very much. I don't know why we go. This happens to us. Like yesterday was a big Ohio day. Today's a big Oregon day. Lots of callers from Oregon. So we'll go to Joe in Oregon, listening on Ave Maria Radio. Joe, you there with us?
Yes, sir.
All right, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, my question is, I need a better understanding of what is meant by to fear the Lord your God, and anywhere in the Bible where the fear God is used. Just that word fear, I've struggled with that like my whole life. I'm 50, so
okay.
And I'm Catholic. And I need a little help with that. I'm driving right now, so I'm just going to hang up and turn the radio back on. All right.
Well, before you go, Joe, can I ask you a question?
Sir.
Are you married?
Yes, sir.
And I hope I'm not putting you on the spot here, but do you love your wife dearly?
You know, the immediate answer would be yes, but honestly,
okay.
I struggle
Let's
with
leave
that.
It at that.
What love
Let's
is.
Leave it at that, Joe. I didn't want to put you on this spot. Imagine loving someone so dearly that you fear harming that relationship, that you fear it. This was a way that I thought it was a beautiful way that actually Dr. Michael Barber explained this in a theology course that I took it when I was getting my master's degree at John Paul II Catholic University. That, you know, fear of the Lord isn't that we're afraid of Him, isn't that we fear Him like we would a monster. No, fear of the Lord is fear of losing our friendship with Him, fear of wronging Him, fear of somehow being offensive toward Him. That's one of, to me, the best explanations I think in a, you know, very layman's terms understanding of fear of the Lord. And Joe, I would hope that would help some.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you very, very much. That's about it. We don't have time for more questions. Jim Blackburn has been our guest. Thank you very much for your calls. Jim, let people know again where they can get in touch with you. If they like, I need to ask another question of that Jim Blackburn. Where could they get in touch with you?
Go to CatholicQuestions.com. You can ask your question online. There's an email address you can use if you want to. There's a phone number you can even call us. There's an address where you can write to us. So, you know, whatever your fancy is, however you want to get a hold of us, just go to CatholicQuestions.com. You'll find all the information there, and we're happy to help.
Jim, thanks very much. It's always great to talk with you.
Thanks for having me, Cy. God bless.
On the way out here, I'll let you know, hey, you know what? If you're someone who runs an RCIA group at your parish, or maybe you'd like to get something for those who are, because RCIA starts in most parishes right around this time of the year. We've discounted books of 20 copies of Trent's book, Why We're Catholic. And so you can get a great deal on that. And a perfect time to share them with folks who are coming into or contemplating coming into the Catholic Church. just go to whywearecatholic.com. Whywearecatholic.com and see the deals on when you buy 20 in bulk to share with other people. That'll do it for us. We'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.